There are less than 100 black female physicists in the U.S. Hadiya Nicole Green is one of them. She's an assistant professor of physiology at the Morehouse School of Medicine, and she's on the forefront of a new technology that uses lasers to target and destroy tumors. Professor Green was awarded a $1 million grant for her research, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I understand you are very young to have won. I'm not even going to go over your resume and all the different awards and acknowledgments that you've gotten, but you are quite young to have accomplished as much as you have.
Well, I don't look at time when I'm working because some things have taken me longer to do than some of my counterparts. Some things I've done earlier in my career than some of my other counterparts. So I just enjoy the journey, and what comes out of it comes out of it.
But do you get time? You're 34?
Five now.
35. Do you actually do anything besides work?
Yes, I have.
I can't imagine how you have time. And
it's funny you say that, and my eyes got big, because I try to have work-life balance, but it has been a struggle, and I have sacrificed a lot. There were lots of 20-hour days and work weekends and holidays and missing weddings, family reunions and funerals and birthday parties sometimes. And there's been a lot of sacrifice poured into my research over the last 11 years. And, you know, it's nice now to be able to take a weekend off here and there and to sleep. That's my guilty pleasure.
Not so guilty. Your focus on cancer specifically, although we'll explain why this laser is not just about cancer, but the focus on cancer seems to have been personal, right? You were raised by your aunt and uncle?
Yes. So my aunt, who raised me from age 4, announced that she had what she called woman's cancer. She announced that right after I graduated.
Is that breast cancer?
Cervical or ovarian, but she didn't really specify. And the family tried to piece together what they had heard from different sources to come up with either cervical or ovarian cancer. And she announced this right after I finished a bachelor's degree in physics from Alabama A&M University. And when she made the announcement, she declared that she would rather die than experience the side effects of chemotherapy and radiation. And I took care of her the last 3 months of her life. And I got to see firsthand how horrible allowing cancer to take over your body really is. And then 3 months after she passed, my uncle who raised me was diagnosed with esophageal cancer. He went through all the chemo and radiation treatments, and I was his caregiver while he was going through those treatments. And I got to see firsthand how horrible the treatments were. And even though he was given 3 months to live, he went on to live for another 10 years or so. Comparing side by side the horrors of cancer and the horrors of cancer treatment, it's like picking the worst of two evils. It seemed so horrible. Like, both were horrible to me. And I just had the conviction that there has to be a better way to do this. There were so many advances in optical communications and our smartphones and all the technology that we use to communicate, but it seemed like we were still in the dark ages in how we treat cancer and how we deal with people who maybe would rather opt out of the standard chemotherapy and radiation treatment regimen. And sometimes senior citizens who have other illnesses would rather something that's a little more targeted, a little less invasive, a little less drastic to their entire body, because they, like my aunt said, that she didn't think that she would survive the treatments anyway, and she would rather die on her own terms. And so for me to watch both of them and their struggle and all of the changes that their bodies went through, it was so heartbreaking that I couldn't figure out a way to live my life without devoting myself to finding a solution to what seemed like a huge problem that has actually continued to affect my family, but affects so many families in America and around the world.
What do you mean it's continued to affect your family? So, other diagnoses?
Yeah, one of my cousins, my aunt's daughter, has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and we just found out in the last 2 weeks. And it's heartbreaking. And when she says to me she wants to volunteer for my research, can I try it on her? And I'm like, no, I have to go through the process to get FDA approval and get approval for a clinical trial and set up everything, because I have to go through that process. But that process is extremely expensive. And so I've been trying to raise awareness for the importance to fund cancer research and to fund the next generation of treatments that are coming out like mine. And it's more than just, can I try the treatment on her? There has to be an official trial. And it has to be done by the books so that nobody gets in trouble, that there are no ethical issues, that there are no liability issues. But it's happening in my family, and it's also happening in so many other families. And I get so many phone calls from people who have been diagnosed with some type of stage four cancer or stage four of some type of cancer, and they've been sent home to die. And it's like, they don't have any other options. And so I try to refer them to other clinical trial sites and offer them encouragement. But it breaks my heart every time someone says, are your treatments ready for humans yet? And I'm like, well, there's a regulatory process and a huge amount of money that I have to raise before I can actually help people. And it's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking. Because, like, I've devoted myself to this work for the last 11 years, but there's still such a long road ahead before I can demonstrate this can actually help people. And so the road to be able to go from a treatment that's working in mice to a treatment that's working in humans is a road that involves FDA regulatory processes and enough money to pay for the clinical trials. And it's a huge mountain to climb. And the kind of support that I've been getting from the community, I feel connected because they resonate with me and I resonate with them. But it's literally been people from all around the world reaching out to me to cheer me on because they see the need for what I'm doing. And there have been people who have committed to giving $5 a month just to help me move forward. And of course, there's the process of writing and competing for government funding for grants. But currently, even with all the advocating that I do for STEM careers and in the competition when everybody has a PhD in a STEM career, only 10% of the applications get funded, roughly, somewhere between 8 and 12%. So it's a huge process, but it's really encouraging when the community supports that process with contributions and donations to our research.
Working with lasers to target tumors, what sets your process apart from those that have come before?
Very good process. So there have been some really extraordinary pioneers in the field using lasers for cancer research. There were several groups who were doing research with lasers and nanoparticles in cell culture, where you're studying
in a petri dish.
In a petri dish, you're studying how the cells respond to the treatment in a petri dish. And then when those same groups moved to their live animal studies, the process that they used to treat the tumors changed drastically. I figured out how to deliver the nanoparticles inside the mouse systemically with the guidance of immunotherapy in the form of an antibody.
And really targeted, very accurate.
Yes. And that's something, that was the subject of the Career Development Award I received. Because
that was the $1.1 million.
Yes, from the Department of Veteran Affairs, from their HBCU Research Scientist Training Program. And with that, it's a platform that actually provides a targeted delivery of the nanoparticles and a fluorescent label to image. So it's a platform to target, image, and treat cancer.
I read somebody describe it as a drone strike. Like, that's how accurate it is. Is that fair?
Well, part of it, I'm a physicist. My PhD is in physics. So I have that type of mentality. But instead of designing things that kill people, I wanted to design something that kills cancer. And so, like, the other people who trained in my lab with me, they're not cancer researchers. They're people who go off and sometimes end up making those drones who kill people or weapons that, and I know that national defense is extremely important work, especially being now a representative for the Department of Veteran Affairs, and I salute everybody who makes sure that we can wake up in a safe place. I appreciate that work, but that wasn't my passion. My passion was to be able to save lives, and that's where I wanted to make my contribution to society.
I want to play a comment from Derek Beach. He's Senior Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs at Morehouse. Here he is talking about your tech.
Dr. Green's technology is pretty innovative. So I think it's going to transform how we treat cancer in general. And instead of giving chemotherapy and having a toxicity throughout the body, you can have a targeted approach just at the tumor site. So you don't get the toxicity that you'll find from chemotherapy with this technology. So very innovative.
Are we talking about lasers? And you said it has to go through systemic, which means it's passing through your system?
So there are two platforms. That's one of them. There are two
platforms. And we're going to talk about the fact that you're using the word platform first.
Yes.
Because that's important.
Yes.
We're talking about this is a technology platform, and that means it's not just about cancer, right?
Yeah, but also most of the cancer biologists that I've worked with, they always talk about you focus on one type of cancer. But as a physicist developing a targeted therapeutic, it's designed to work on more than one type of cancer. It's a platform therapy that was designed for solid tumors. So any type of solid tumor, whether it's head and neck, which was my initial demonstration, or breast, or a brain tumor, a cervical, or any type of solid tumor, the idea that I'm developing now is that it will work for a variety of cancer types.
Is that a kind of a product of the fact that you are coming to it from the perspective of a physicist as opposed to a biologist?
Yes. And that's the beauty of doing interdisciplinary research, is that you come from one discipline, bring those concepts and those ideas to another discipline. And I think that's the cornerstone of innovation.
So how much money is it going to take to get you through your clinic? You're starting to laugh already.
Yeah, because every time I ask the surgeons and the clinicians, they always say it depends on the size of the trial, the duration of the trial. Like, it really does depend. And I always keep pushing. But there have been a few studies that were published that averaged the last 200 or so medical devices that took a medical device from a laboratory bench through commercialization to the bedside in the hospital. And on average, to get through the first set of clinical trials was $30 million. The last set of clinical trials was $94 million. That was the average. And so by the time you go from start to finish, you know, we're talking $125 million. And that's a lot of money.
So, especially if you're going $5 a month.
But if 2 million people give $5 a month, you know, magic can happen. I've dedicated the last 11 years of my life, and I've sacrificed a lot. And so when people say $5 at a time, I support you. It's like, we'll do it $5 at a time.
I've been speaking with Hadiya Nicole Green. She's an assistant professor at the Morehouse School of Medicine. You must meet young women
all the time.
What, for the any young girl listening at this point, maybe who's discouraged from following science or is discouraged from following medicine, what would you say?
Oh, very good question. So I've had, I can't even count now, how many young women who have contacted me who have been inspired just because I didn't quit. And to know that no matter what happens, if you have a dream, that's in a way a divine assignment and permission to pursue something. And when people tell you that's impossible, they may be right that it's impossible for them, but what's impossible for somebody may be impossible because that wasn't the dream that they were given. But if that's your dream, that's your confirmation that you can do it, if that's your dream. And don't ever let anybody tell you that your dream is impossible because it was given to you, not them. And don't ever let anybody discourage you. And there are times when it gets hard. Nobody ever said that the road would be easy. But if you know that's your dream and that's your passion, don't give up on it.
Hadiyah Nicole Green of Morehouse, thank you so much.
Thank you.